Hey guys, this is Tippett Choate, the Liberty Advisor, and today we've got a great show coming up. We have the legend Walter Block on the show, and some of the things we get into are, how can you be an anarchist and a Trump supporter at the same time? And we've got all these timestamps below, so if you guys want to skip forward directly to that, be my guest. And I know a bunch of people's heads are going to explode from that statement all the way around. We also have Dr. Block's take on Bernie Sanders, whom he used to run track with in college, and also his take on Tulsi Gabbard as well. Also going to get into the exact moment that I decided to leave the Libertarian Party and subsequently rejoin it. We're going to get into some of the problems that I've got with Trump. And then we're also going to talk with Dr. Block about tariffs, trade deals, gold standards, defending the undefendable, and of course, who Dr. Block is supporting for president in 2020. Also get to hear Dr. Block's claim that Mike Pence would do better in the general election than Donald Trump. I think that's sort of an absurd statement. I'll let you guys be the judge of that. And you'll also see Dr. Block get a tiny bit upset when I suggested that I went from being a minarchist to an anarchist after the election. I really thought that, you know, judging by what I saw from the outside looking in, that he went from being an anarchist to a minarchist. And you'll get to see his reaction and commentary towards that. Welcome everyone to a very special edition of the Liberty Advisor Show. I'm your host, Tippett Choate. And today we are joined by legendary libertarian economist, Dr. Walter Block. Now, before I get into his bio, I just want to set the stage that there is a very good cross-section of people who are going to be listening to this. Of course, we have libertarians, including libertarians that voted for Gary Johnson, a lot of libertarians that voted for Donald Trump, and obviously the anarchists that didn't vote and cannot be convinced to vote. And I'm sure we've got a few maybe FBI and NSA agents that monitor me that maybe listened to, that voted for Hillary. But anyways, we have a diverse crowd of anarchists, libertarians, and Trump supporters, which is why I wanted to set the stage, because Dr. Block is probably the most famous libertarian that was pro-Donald Trump outwardly. I know he created, I think he was patient zero for the Libertarians for Trump movement, at least when it comes to the, you know, celeb libertarians. I know Doug Casey was also pretty pro Donald Trump, but I know there's some asterisks next to that statement, so I don't want to put any words in his mouth. Well, you know, I just also want to set the stage that I don't follow a lot of the libertarian economists super closely, and I'm talking about obviously guys like Dr. Block, Bob Murphy, Tom Woods, because a lot of time I am doing my own research. But anyways, what I really wanted to get into today, and why I wanted to have Dr. Block on here, is because since he is the most probably preeminent pro-Donald Trump libertarian there is, I was probably running and probably still do have the largest Facebook page for libertarians that went the way of Donald Trump. Now, I've got a little bit different take on where sort of my support for Donald Trump is now. But first, I want to go over Dr. Block's bio, which we're going to read the abbreviated version because the full version is almost like another book because he's accomplished so much. But Dr. Walter E. Block is the Harold E. Worth Eminent Scholar, Endowed Chair, and Professor of Economics at Loyola University, New Orleans. His PhD was from Columbia University. His interests include Austrian economics and libertarian theory. He has published almost 600 articles in referred journals, 27 books, and thousands of op-eds. He lectures globally at university campuses, businesses, and civic groups. He has a series on privatization of everything, including roads, oceans, and space. His most popular books are Defending the Undefendable, versions 1 and 2, and he is now working on volume 3 in this series, plus a libertarian analysis of abortion. So obviously, Dr. Block is not one to shy away from controversy, given all these subjects that we're talking about today. His main claim to fame is that he once shook the hand of Ludwig von Mises and never washed his hand afterwards. It is now pretty dirty, but if you shake his hand, you can channel his inner hero of his. And Dr. Block has also been named number 46 on the top 100 list of most influential libertarians. We tried getting 1 through 45 on, but you know, we had to set this getting. But and I was very, very happy to have him, Dr. Block, on the show today, and welcome to the show. And first, just wanted to get into, you know, kind of your background on supporting Donald Trump, when you started supporting him, when you decided maybe to move from either not voting or voting libertarian to support Mr. Trump. But thank you for coming on the show today, and very glad you can be with us today.
Well, thanks for having me on the show. It's a delight.
Thank you. Can we sort of get into like when you decided that you would start supporting Donald Trump? And I wasn't sure if before, if you were always supporting libertarians and, or if you were more anarchist and just didn't vote at all. But when was sort of your, you know, thought process of when you decided that you would swing your support for Donald Trump in the 2016 election?
Well, first, let me just say that anarchists are not people who can't vote or who don't vote. I'm an anarchist. I vote. I was a member of the Libertarian Party before the National Party started. National Party started, I think, in 1970 or 71 in Colorado, and I ran for assembly, New York State Assembly, in 1969, because we had a Libertarian Party in New York State where I was then. So I think it's incorrect to say that anarchists don't vote, can't vote, and if they vote, they're incompatible with anarchism. Anarchists just want to have no government, but just because we want to have no government doesn't mean we can't vote for the lesser of two evils. You know, there's a joke, The Economist was asked, how is your wife? And the answer was, compare to what? Well, in 2015, Donald Trump was running against Hillary. Well, before he was running against Hillary, he was running against about 16 or 17 other people for the Republican nomination. And I supported Rand Paul because I thought Rand Paul was the closest to libertarianism. By the way, Ron Paul also ran for office, ran for president. He ran for Congress from Texas, and he won a lot of seats in Texas. And I certainly supported Ron and Rand. But when Donald got the nomination of the Republican Party, it was a choice between him and Hillary. And actually, you know, I favored Bernie over Hillary. Why did I favor Bernie over Hillary? First of all, because I went to high school with him. We were on the track team together. I was sort of a buddy of his. But more seriously, he was more for peace than Hillary. He wanted to bring the troops home, and Hillary was a warmonger. And Donald, so I supported Bernie vis-a-vis Hillary, even though their economics is horrible. But, you know, the lesser of two evils. And then Donald was running in 2016 on a peace platform. He was saying, well, you know, why do we have soldiers hither, thither, and yon? I'm putting words in his mouth. He didn't say it quite that way, but, you know, let's bring some of the troops home. Let's make these other people pay for the troops that are there. Why do we have, I think it was 800 military bases in 130 different countries? And there are only about 230 different countries in the world, and we've got soldiers in two-thirds of them. You know, and Donald was saying, what's that? And also, Donald seemed a little bit better on economics than Hillary, so I supported Donald. And I was instrumental in starting two groups with co-sponsors in both cases. One was Libertarians for Trump, and we got about 4,000 signatures on that. And then I also started this thing called Scholars for Trump. Why Scholars for Trump? Well, because the major media was saying that the only people that would vote for Donald would be stupid rednecks and, you know, hicks or whatever. And I wanted to get people with a PhD or a medical degree or a law degree, some advanced degree, and say, yes, I supported Donald vis-a-vis Hillary. And we got about 150 signatures on that, which not as much as the libertarians, but that was a more select group. So I supported Donald because he was better on economics than Hillary. Hillary was more of an interventionist. Donald's a businessman. He was against regulations. He said, you know, for every new regulation, we got to get rid of two regulations, which endeared him to me. And he also said taxes are too high, which also endeared him to me, whereas Hillary never said taxes are too high. I don't think she ever met a tax she didn't like. So I had no compunction in supporting Donald vis-a-vis Hillary. Now, look, if it was Rand Paul versus Donald, or Ron Paul versus Donald, or you, or Lou Rockwell, or anyone else, I wouldn't be picking Donald. He's not a libertarian. He's sort of got no philosophical background. He's got tendencies here and there, and his tendencies weren't all that bad. Well, they were better than Hillary. So I supported him, and I had no problem with that. Okay, now the next...
And just for the record, I'll be old enough by about 4 or 5 days for next election, but I wasn't old enough for last go around, so...
Ah, okay, well, I hope that we can we'll see who's running for the Libertarian Party, and whether Donald's running, and is it going to be Pocahontas or Bernie, or, you know, which person from the Democratic Party. I will say that of all the Democrats, I like Tulsi the best. Why do I like Tulsi the best and Bernie next best? Because foreign policy. Tulsi's foreign policy is almost like Ron Paul's foreign policy. You've got too many troops there and bring them home. And so now her economics is horrible. But foreign policy is pretty important. And foreign policy determines economic policy, not the other way around. The, you know, there's the dog wags the tail that tail doesn't wag the dog. I think foreign policy is the dog and economic policy is the tail. So even though I'm an economist, not a foreign policy expert, I place greater weight on a person's foreign policy and domestic policy. And Tulsi is, you know, A minus, maybe A or A plus. She's really good. So I would support her. I don't know that she'll make it, but if she did, then I'd have a problem, you know, Tulsi versus Donald. I'd still probably pick Donald because Donald might then become even more anti-war, given that Tulsi is there. But I doubt that Tulsi will make it. It'll probably be one of the front runners, and maybe Michael Bloomberg. I don't know his foreign policy, but
or God forbid Hillary again.
Oh, it might be Hillary again. Who knows? You're quite right. Okay, so the question comes: I'm a libertarian. How am I supporting Donald Trump and not Gary Johnson? Well, first of all, Gary Johnson was not the best libertarian presidential candidate we've ever had. Better than Bob Barr. Anybody's better than Bob Barr, but, you know, he stepped on his tongue. He didn't know where place in Middle East. I don't even know it anymore. I'm stepping on my tongue. And also, he was a little weak on, should we compel the Christian to bake a cake for gay people? I mean, you know, that's not cool. To compel a Christian baker to bake a cake for gay people when he didn't want to, and Gary Johnson saying, yes, we should compel him to do that. Not exactly libertarian.
And his stance on the Federal Reserve, they asked him, you know, about the Federal Reserve, and instead of saying end the Fed or getting philosophical that shouldn't exist, he's like, well, I don't really necessarily agree with the dual mandate, some wishy-washy, I can get that from any answer from anyone else. I mean, just crap.
But still, okay, so he wasn't that great, but still, you know, what do they say? Sure, he's a son of a bitch, but he's our son of a bitch. Sure, he wasn't as good as he could have been. No one is. He tried his best, and I'm sort of a friend of his, buddy of his, admirer of his. You know, he's not all bad. And also, if the Libertarian Party can get more votes than the difference between the Republican and Democrat, that would put libertarianism on the front pages. And I like that idea of libertarianism being on the front pages. You know, when I first joined the libertarian movement in 1965, I asked Murray Rothbard, how many libertarians were there in the world? And he said, 25. 25!
Well, was that libertarians or was that anarchists? He was...
No, libertarians. 25. I mean, and he would be in a position to know because he was Mr. Libertarian and he would know everyone who was a libertarian in any country. And he said, 25. Well, you know, how many do we have now? Well, probably 25 million in the whole world. And part of it, I think, is due to the Libertarian Party. Now, Murray, at the inception of the Libertarian Party, was very pro-Libertarian Party. His idea was, look, you know, for 3.5 years, the average guy is interested in pizza and beer and football. And all of a sudden, in the last 6 months or 8 months or now a year and a half, all of a sudden, they're interested in politics. So if we want to get the word out, we should have a political party. And I think Murray's insight was valid and preeminently valid, absolutely valid. So I'm a big supporter of the Libertarian Party. As I say, I ran for office in 69, and I supported the Libertarian Party through thick and thin. And now this guy Sarwak keeps attacking Ron Paul. I don't understand that. I mean, Ron Paul is Saint Ron Paul, and for a libertarian leader to criticize Ron continually, I mean, it's just obscene and obnoxious, but what the heck, he's our son of a bitch, so I support the Libertarian Party. So how do I reconcile my support for the Libertarian Party with my support for Donald Trump? As follows. I wrote about this, I said, look, if you're in a red state, I don't understand why it's a red state is Republican. You'd think red state would be Democrat because the Democrats are closer to the reds, you know, the commies. But in any case, if you're in a red state like Louisiana, where Donald is going to kick Hillary's butt, vote for Donald. Vote for Gary Johnson. Donald doesn't need your vote. On the other hand, if you're in California, which is a blue state, which Hillary's going to kick Donald's butt, again, vote for Gary Johnson, vote for the Libertarian Party, because Donald doesn't really need your vote. He's going to lose California or Massachusetts anyway. However, if you're in a purple state, Pennsylvania or some of the Midwest states where Donald needs every vote, then vote for Donald, because we don't want Hillary. Hillary is horrible Hillary. And in that way, how many purple states are there? 6, 8, 10, not that many. So for 40 or 45 states, we're supporting Libertarian Party. And for 5 or 8 states, we're supporting Donald. So we can sort of have our cake and eat it. I like that idea, having our cake and eating it too. Namely, achieving two goals which seem to be a little inconsistent with each other. One, we don't want Hillary. And two, we want to promote the Libertarian Party. As bad a vehicle as it is, we still want to promote the Libertarian Party. So if we do that, we can promote the Libertarian Party in 45 states, and in 5 states not promote them, and every state help with Donald.
Well, how fitting that it's a bad vehicle when the head of the party is a former used car salesman. So no, just I have my own stories about Nick. I tried to help him out the very first time I met him at a private discussion group that Ernest Hancock. I'm sort of like a right hand man of Ernie. I live here with him, not with him, but very close with him. And so he invited me to a group. I told basically Nick that, hey, you know, I did, you know, all this different stuff. I'd love to help him out. And he said, listen, anyone who even thought about voting for Donald Trump has no place in this party whatsoever. We have a natural ally with the left. Basically, it was a gigantic FU to my face at this really small private event that I came to him with no animosity. And it was really that then led me in some of the work that Michael Heiss of Mises caucus has been doing, that then led me to then rejoin as a libertarian to basically, you know, help eventually try to ouster the people like Nick Starbucks of the world. But sorry about digressing of that. But here I am trying to come to help them out, telling them, you know, different natural, you know, things that they could do to help get conservatives. And he goes, listen, we want nothing to do with anyone that voted for Trump. And we have to go with, it's naturally we have allies who voted for Hillary, not with Donald Trump. And to me, I couldn't even believe that type of statement. That was just so outrageous to me. And, you know, I wasn't there helping his mayoral run, even though I live in Phoenix. So sorry about the little aside on the libertarian inner politics.
Well, I'm a fan of Ernie Hancock. I've been on his show several times. I don't get much of a word in, but I've been on his show many times. He's very voluble. By the way, I resist your denigration of used car salesmen. As you mentioned, I'm working on Defending 3, and I might put the used car salesman in there. Okay. Used car salesmen are very important. We have to have used car markets, and they help with that. So I don't denigrate Sarwark for being a used car salesman. If anything, I applaud that.
Well, then I guess you could go with, you know, lawyer and DC Politico, you know, so I don't know, between like the, one of those three, but maybe all three of those.
I favor all three. And this idea, you know, are we left or right? Lou Rockwell and Hans Hoppe of the Mises Institute are saying, you know, we're part of the right. Ernie Hancock and others are saying, no, we're really part of the left. I say, no, we're sui generis. We're unique. We're different than them. Yes, the right is a little bit better on economics than the left, and the left is a little bit better on personal liberties than the right, but neither of them are very good on economics nor personal liberties, whereas we're good on both, and foreign policy. We're excellent on all three. So we are not of the left. We are not of the right, nor are we moderates. I sometimes call myself Walter Moderate Block just as a joke. I mean, you know, this whole left-right spectrum, usually I get right in the middle because I answer all the economic questions on the right and all the personal liberties on the left, so I'm a moderate. No, libertarians are unique. We're different. Rather than a left-right spectrum, we should have a triangle. And we are equidistant from our friends, the conservatives, and also our friends, the liberals or the progressives. We're different than them. And I resist both claims that libertarian is part of the right or it's part of the left.
Now, was there any, and I couldn't agree more with that statement, but was there any one singular moment that, you know, basically kind of did it for you of, hey, this is why I'm going to vote for Donald Trump? Because I know for me, I can pinpoint the exact moment where I voted for Gary Johnson in 2012. I do Ironman triathlons and so does Gary Johnson. So I respect him a lot. I was, you know, went to campaign events out in 2011 when he was still a Republican for Gary Johnson. And then here I am. I remember exactly when it was. It was August of 2016 in It was Bill Weld giving an interview that said something to the effect of someone asked him about handguns. He goes, well, or AR-15s. He goes, well, we know AR-15s are dangerous, but the real problem are handguns, which are vastly more dangerous than AR-15s. And we need to limit them to, I forgot the exact verbiage he used, but, you know, six bullets or some crap like that. And it was at that exact moment that I decided, you know what? I'm sick of the Libertarian Party. You know, we've got libertarians talking about gun control. That was the final moment that did it for me. It was like August 12th, 2016. So there was an exact moment that I can pinpoint. So then I started it's called Libertarian Advisor. Then I ended up getting pissed off at Nick Starwark and switched it to Liberty Advisor. And now I'm back into the Libertarian Party to try to, you know, affect it from the inside. And the only small thing I would criticize what you said is Ernie definitely doesn't think libertarians more left. He's more the anarchist of, hey, you're still voting. We don't even care. But other than that, was there any singular moment like I had that decided for you to push from one way to another?
Well, again, you know, Murray Rothbard used to say every dog gets one bite. Gary Johnson gets five bites, but he really had 10, and, you know, that's too many. He was not a good spokesman for libertarianism. When I first met him, I said, are you familiar with the works of Murray Rothbard? He said, Murray who? I mean, he'd never heard of Murray Rothbard. You don't even hear of Murray Rothbard. You're not really much of a libertarian. Donald is a lot better than Gary on gun control. Donald was pretty good on gun control. We just had John Bell Edwards win the governor for Louisiana. He's a Democrat, but he's sort of a conservative Democrat. He's very good on gun control. He's, you know, pro-gun or pro-Second Amendment. It's interesting. You run triathlons?
Yes, sir.
I do half marathons and marathons. I do race walking, so we have something in common there.
I also graduated from a SUNY school too, so I saw that you were teaching at SUNY Stony Brook at one point. So I went to SUNY Geneseo.
Okay, well, we have that in common as well. I swim and run and bike, but I've never been in a triathlon. I've been in a few duathlons, but one of these days I'll do the triathlon.
Oh, and I actually did my second marathon ever carrying a Ron Paul banner in the 2012. I did two back-to-back marathons within a month of each other, and it was January 2012 of the primary season, and I ran the entire thing carrying a Ron Paul banner.
Oh, so, bless you. Well, I wear Ron Paul t-shirts. I want to reduce my time. I don't want to be carrying a banner, but I do wear Ron Paul t-shirts, and people come up to me and promote liberty in that way. So we certainly have that in common. But again, just because we had a bad spokesman or not an excellent spokesman in Gary Johnson doesn't mean that we shouldn't promote the Libertarian Party. So I support you working from within. And also, you know, the Liberty Caucus of the Republican Party is also good. I mean, look, Rand Paul is a Republican. Not a libertarian, he's a Republican. I mean, he's very libertarian. And when Ron Paul ran for the Libertarian Party, he got the usual 1% of the vote. Whereas when he ran for the Republican nomination, that's when he converted millions of people to libertarianism. So I don't deprecate the Republican Party, and, you know, I don't deprecate the Democratic Party. If there were a libertarian who wanted to run for office as a Democrat, I would support that person as well. And probably we should have a Liberty Caucus in the Democratic Party as well. Because I want to be even Steven.
Yeah, I mean, I'm for, you know, full 360, just try to, you know, spread liberty all the way around. But I don't think it means, you know, I feel like a lot of the current establishment within inside of the Libertarian Party wants to move it more to the left, at least is the perception that I get from people that I talk with. And I don't spend my day-to-day inside of the Libertarian Party. It's just, you know, what I hear about inside baseball from Ernie and, you know, a few other people. But I know personally my stance for Donald Trump has changed, you know, a little bit. I feel like I went from basically minarchist more basically towards anarchist after the election. And just my perception is maybe you went more from anarchist to minarchist, but then again, you set the stage for the previous, you know, half an hour of where you are. And I see now, you know, where you stand exactly on that. But going forward, are you, I know personally, I have a lot of problems with Donald Trump, because for me, my big issue was the Federal Reserve. Another big issue was gun control. And then I see, you know, essentially with putting guys like Gary Cohen in, who, you know, was a pro, you know, carbon tax, big time Hillary supporter. And for me, it's like, I'm not going to and I didn't bust my butt to get a guy like Gary Cohn in there, or a guy like Reince Priebus, or a lot of these other, you know, snakes like John Bolton that he had in there that eventually came back, you know, to bite him. And it was the day that he picked Jerome Powell. You know, I had a podcast that came out that day where I was, you know, very, very upset. It wasn't family friendly radio. I was so pissed that he put Jerome Powell in there that, you know, at that point I thought the rest of the presidency was wasted. Then, you know, it only took about 40, 50 days to start bombing Syria. And I know the reasons why he was doing that and different war gaming that's going on to appease the neocons. And, you know, it's a big mess when you're inside of that framework. But I think he was trying to be too nice to the left, work with his enemies, when really, you know, they've got, you know, as Chuck Schumer said, you know, seven ways to Sunday to try to get you out of there. And so at this point, I think he sort of lost the, you know, he didn't have that Ron Paul philosophical, you know, the Federal Reserve is bad. And because when he was running, it was on a stance of, look, the Fed's doing political things to help Hillary and Obama out, and they're keeping the rates way too low just to help them out. And now he's in there, and now he's complaining that the rates aren't low, and he's actually has advocated a little bit for negative interest rates. And so for me, and I am sort of in a red purple state in Arizona right now. And so, you know, I did vote for Gary Johnson in 2012, voted for Donald Trump in 2016. And really, I'm not, you know, entirely sold. I mean, it would more leaning towards either not voting or advocating for like a Jacob Hornberger in the Libertarian Party, or maybe like an Adam Kokesh, but probably more Hornberger. Or, you know, I probably could be convinced for Tulsi Gabbard as well, just to throw a monkey wrench into the system as well. But for me, for Donald Trump, you know, enacting some gun laws was way too much for me. And then, you know, bombing, you know, getting all the stuff that's going on with Syria right now. I know he talks about leaving, but talking about leaving, and he takes troops out of there and puts them into Saudi Arabia. I feel like a lot of us just talk, and the first 2 years are wasted. And now we've got, you know, a $1 trillion deficit, you know, $989 billion, but, you know, it's really 1.2 if you count the, you know, I don't need to tell you this stuff. So when it comes to, you know, advocating for Donald Trump going forward, are you dead set on, you know, going to definitely vote for him in 2020, or you're still sort of a free agent that, you know, wants to see certain things, or maybe you don't have your mind up? So I want to see if you can get a comment on that.
Well, you raised a lot of issues. Let me talk about two or three of them. First of all, the minarchist versus the anarchist business. I was converted to libertarianism. I was a Bernie Sanders socialist when I was in high school and halfway through college. And then Ayn Rand came to speak at Brooklyn College, and I linked up with her, and she converted me to minarchism. And then I met Murray Rothbard, and I met Ayn Rand in 63. I met Murray in 65, and I've been an anarchist since 65, and solid anarchist. I sometimes joke, you know, that I'm not really an anarchist, because we should have a government, and the function of government should make compel everyone to read Man, Economy, and State, and that's its only function. So I just sort of kid around when I say I'm a minarchist, but I'm an anarchist, and I see no incompatibility between being an anarchist and voting and taking an interest in politics. Murray was a political hound, I mean, and he's an anarchist, so there's no incompatibility there. You're quite right. There is a tendency in the Libertarian Party to move toward the left. They're this group called the Bleeding Heart Libertarians. And what I call, the way I see the libertarian movement is that there are five levels. The top level is anarchist, laissez-faire anarchist, right-wing anarchist, whatever you want to call it, Murray Rothbard. The second level is minarchist, and the people most associated with minarchism would be Ayn Rand and Robert Nozick. The third level down would be constitutionalism, Ron Paul. And why is it a little lower? Because Ron Paul says whatever the Constitution says, and, you know, interpreted by judges like Ron Paul or Andrew Napolitano, not the present Supreme Court. And they add post offices and post roads. And one of my books is we should privatize roads. So that would be the third level. The fourth level of libertarian, I would say classical liberals like Milton Friedman and Friedrich Hayek, you know, they're pretty libertarian, but they allow a little welfare and a little of this, a little of that. So they'd be the fourth level down. And the fifth level down is, I call them thick libertarians, T-H-I-C-K, not sick, thick libertarians. What are thick libertarians? Thick libertarians are people who say that in addition to the non-aggression principle and private property rights based on homesteading and free association, we have other things that are part of libertarianism. For example, you have to love gays. have to love gays? What's got, look, the libertarian position on gays is they're like anyone else, and no one should use violence against them, period. And if you want to discriminate against them, fine, because you can discriminate against anyone. Another one is that these lefties around Reason magazine have, is you have to favor interracial marriage. No, you don't have to favor interracial marriage. I mean, our view on interracial marriage is roughly like our view on chess or checkers. Namely, we have no opinion on it. It's irrelevant. And the idea that you would import extraneous things into libertarianism is an attempt to hijack libertarianism. Look, you and I are athletes. We do marathons, half marathons, swimming, biking. Suppose we said that in order to be a good libertarian, you have to be an athlete. That would be thick libertarianism, neither left nor right, but weird. I mean, it's crazy to say that in order to be a libertarian, you have to be an avid athlete. It's just crazy. So a lot of these people are left-wing, thick libertarians that input left-wing stuff. But then again, there are right-wing thick libertarians who say that in order to be a libertarian, you have to hate gays, or you have to oppose interracial marriage. We have no view on gays, and no views on interracial marriage, and no views on athleticism, and no views on Mozart, and no views on chess. There are a lot of things about which we have no views on. We only have views on non-aggression principle and private property rights and free association. So those would be the five different levels of libertarianism, the way I see it. And unfortunately, the Libertarian Party seems to be taken over to a great degree by left-wing thick libertarians, and just sort of left-wing libertarians. And I would hope that we would oppose both thick right-wing and thick left-wing, thick conservative and thick progressive, because thickism has no place in libertarianism, because we just have no views on these things. Okay, now to answer your question. I'm a professor. I'm not supposed to answer questions directly. I'm supposed to go off on tangents. Well, I just went off on a few tangents.
Thanks. It's in the book. So go read this chapter. Yeah.
It's all your fault. You got me. Now, your question is, what am I going to do in November 2020? Who am I going to vote for? Well, it really all depends on what Donald says, on who the Democratic candidate is. Look, you know, it's interesting. The Democratic Party is doing to Tulsi what the Republican Party did to Ron Paul. Namely, I remember one time Ron Paul, I forget whether it was Iowa or some other state, and Ron Paul came in second, and they gave first, third, fourth, and fifth. And people said, well, who came in second? And they wouldn't say. It was Ron Paul.
And he actually did win Iowa, but they didn't tell him he won Iowa until that he won the delegates until like after the actual election was already over with, too. And that's,
yeah, I mean, just like the Democratic Party had their thumb on the side of Hillary, not Bernie, the Republican Party had their thumb on anyone but Ron. And the Democratic Party now has their thumb on anyone but Tulsi. Well, you know, if Tulsi wins the Democratic nomination, you know, I would be a little conflicted, because she's very good. She's better than Donald on foreign policy. As you say, Donald talks a little bit of pulling troops home. Instead, he pushes them here or there or whatever. He doesn't really do it. And he hires John Bolton to be his advisor. He should have hired Ron Paul or you or me or Lou Rockwell or some sensible person. So if Tulsi gets the nomination, I'm going to be very conflicted. But she probably won't. You know, it's interesting. I don't know the foreign policy views of Pocahontas. I don't know the foreign policy views of any of them except Bernie from 2016. But nowadays, he doesn't talk about that much. So I don't know the views on foreign policy, which I think is very important, of all the Democrats except for Tulsi. And maybe eventually it'll come out. You know, Tulsi will be on the next debate, and she'll probably make her views known about foreign policy. And the others will just ignore her or say, well, you know, she's a racist, or, you know, I don't know, you know, some sort of irrelevancy kind of thing like that.
Well, their view is actually whatever Donald Trump's view, and then just the opposite of that besides Tulsi. So Tulsi's the only one that's sort of aligned with him. And I actually think she would beat Trump toe-to-toe, just because, you know, she would siphon off, you know, a few, because Trump couldn't play up the military going up against a current serving military member. So I think he would actually lose going up head to head. But the Democrats, the fake left, as I like to call them, they can't have someone that's actually anti-war in there, because they only, you know, it's only anti-war in name only, in my opinion.
Well, you know, traditionally the left was anti-war and the right was pro-war. I mean, I grew up during the Vietnam War, and all the anti-Vietnam War protests were left protests, not right protests, which is probably why the universities are so bad now and full of left-wing hatefulness, because the left-wingers in the 70s got their college deferment and got PhDs, and the righties went over and fought the Vietnamese. So that's one possible explanation as to why the universities are, a totally owned subsidiary of the Democratic Party, with a few exceptions. I'm a professor. I'm not a part of the Democratic Party in that way. So to answer your question, I'm not really sure. It depends upon who the Democrats nominate. And if they nominate Tulsi, which I doubt, then I would be a little conflicted. I probably give the edge to Donald on economics. I'm not sure about that. Maybe I'd go for Tulsi, whereas if any of the others get in, I'd go for Donald. And depending upon, I would pull the same thing in 2020 that I did in 2016 vis-a-vis the Democratic Party. If Bumper Hornberger gets in, or any of these other good people get in, I would say, vote for Donald in the purple states, and in every other state, vote for the Democratic, vote for the Libertarian Party candidate.
And then we should just get a movement where, a lot of these soft Republicans, you only vote Republican because they only know two options. If they just did the opposite too, like, hey, if you guys do this for these states, and we'll do it for you guys in those states. But, and I do know quite a few, pretty hardcore libertarians, anarchists, that are pulling for Tulsi, especially up in the Free State Project. I know, like, my friend Jay Noon is, he's a big hardcore anarchist. I know Mark Edge is a Free Talk Live, and basically his stance is, hey, the Democrats are going to nominate somebody that is a fact, and since there is going to be someone on the top of the Democratic ticket, I'd rather have somebody like Tulsi than no. But and the other thing I want to point out is, I think that Trump, and because we do have a lot of listeners that constantly say that I'm too critical of Trump, or that I'm too pro-Trump, being a libertarian, you piss off people on both sides of the equation. But, I was out there, I've probably stood in line 15 hours cumulatively, getting into Trump rallies. I was one of the first people in line at one of them, standing out in 110 degrees in Arizona. My daughter was born his first full day in office, and I was wearing a Trump shirt, So for people to say that, I'm somehow not pro Donald Trump, when I spent all this money on Facebook ads going into battleground states, and now I've been effectively, put in a digital gulag on Facebook, and now I'm on.
Wait, I give me 1 second. I have to show you something.
Yep.
Here are the three hats about which I'm most proud. This one says, "Make America Great Again." This one says, "Keep America Great." And this one is it.
Yep.
Cartman from South Park. I'm a big fan of South Park, so those are my three favorite hats.
No, I can go get mine right here too. Just 1 second.
Okay.
So this was a signed Donald Trump Make America Great Again hat that was purchased before the election, thinking that he was going to win. And then I thought he might get assassinated, and it might be worth even more money afterwards, because I thought the deep state would take him out. Not that I was hoping that, I just thought that, things are so corrupt. So, so anyone who says that I wasn't pro Donald Trump enough, how many of you guys spent $250 on a signed hat before the election? Probably hardly any of you. So,
because I never even saw a white Donald Trump hat. I saw plenty of red ones. This kid with the Native Indian activist, the one who slammed, he was wearing a red one. So, a white one must be rare, sort of like a white rhino or something. I don't know.
And it's signed it on top of that as well. But yeah, I guess, we've got maybe another 20 minutes here, and maybe we can shift gears over to the current economics, especially since we are. We both did pull for Donald Trump. We both come from economic, financial backgrounds. And now, I want to, when I criticize things like tariffs, or I criticize the debt exploding, I get people like, oh, you're just, a libtard, and you don't know what you're talking about. And so can you maybe provide some commentary on, on tariffs? And, I know that Doug Casey once said that tariffs are basically a self-imposed embargo on yourself. And from a pro-Trump anarchist, what can you say out there to the conservatives who, you know, right now think that the tariffs are a great thing and the trade war is a great thing, and that basically all this interventionism with trade is, you know, the way that we should be going?
Well, I'm not a big fan of Milton Friedman, and sometimes I call him a commie because he's a Rhodes socialist. But a friend of mine once said, well, under whose aegis would you rather live, Milton Friedman or pretty much, you know, any politician? And, you know, obviously Milton Friedman. Milton Friedman was magnificent on tariffs. Milton Friedman said what we ought to have is a unilateral declaration of free trade with everyone. No more NAFTA, CAFTA agreements with this one, agreements with CETO, GATT, whatever. Just no tariffs, no subsidies, export subsidies, no not only tariffs, but also, what do you call it, quotas or none of that. Because look, trade is what makes the country great. The reason the U.S., you know, the U.S. nowadays, they take these surveys of high school kids in math and stuff like that. And the high school kids in the U.S. don't do that well compared to Japanese kids or Swiss kids or kids from other places. Why then are we so rich, even though we're stupider than them? One of the reasons, we have a gigantic free trade zone. We have 350 million Americans or 330 or whatever it is, and this free trade among us all. We don't have tariffs. I'm in Louisiana, you're in Arizona. I don't know what you guys produce, probably cactus juice or something like that. We don't have any tariffs against cactus juice, and we produce jazz and sugar cane, and you don't have any tariffs against us. Every once in a while, some Midwestern state tries to have a tariff against California wines because they want to produce a wine industry, and it's hard to grow grapes there, so they'll tax California wines. But the Supreme Court, bless them, has always come out in favor of, you know, free trade. It's not as good as it could be because, you know, if you're a lawyer here or a chemist there, you might have to, or a doctor, you might have to get a test when you go to a different state. So it's not perfect, but it's pretty much a free trade zone. The idea, look, if tariffs would help, you know, they say, well, we don't want to have, we must have tariffs against Japanese because the Japanese are super duper people, you know, and it's just crazy. I mean, you have the in economics, we have this thing called comparative advantage, the law of comparative advantage and the law of absolute advantage. Just because they're better than us at everything in all goods doesn't mean that you can't benefit from trade. Look, a lawyer can produce a thousand a day, and a typist can produce a hundred a day, say. And for every day of lawyering, the lawyer needs a typist to type up stuff. So he could be self-sufficient and one day lawyering and one day typing. And so for 2 days, he makes $1,100. Whereas if he hires a typist, even though he's a better typist than she is, and he has to pay a $200 for the 2 days, but he makes $2,000 for the 2 days, and he makes $1,800 rather than $1,100, you're much better off that way. So the idea that people would put tariffs and not allow Mexican goods or Chinese goods to come in is, you know, is horrendous. Now we're not talking about military, atom bomb, stuff like that. We're just talking about ordinary goods and services. And not only the libertarian view, but the economic view. You know, look, economists aren't all libertarians. That's an understatement.
Most aren't, yes.
most economists are not libertarians. But on minimum wage and rent control and free trade, economists are pretty good. You know, you get 90-95% of economists will say that tariffs are bad. And yet, you know, Donald speaks out of both sides of his mouth on tariffs. Every once in a while says, yes, I love free trade. And then what does he do? He has tariffs here and tariffs there. And, you know, so he really should read Economics in One Lesson by Henry Hazlitt. Or
and then he'll say the dollar is always going to be the strongest. And then the next tweet is we need to have interest rates below zero. You know, to beat Germany.
I mean, so. The Fed, I favor the gold standard. I'm a Ron Paul, Rothbard person on the gold standard. Not really. I don't favor the gold standard. I just favor free market money. And I note that whenever people were free to choose, they chose gold. Milton Friedman had a series, Free to Choose, which was pretty good. But he's against the gold standard. And yet, he says You know, he promotes free to choose. And when people were free to choose, they chose gold. And yet he opposes gold. So he's, you know, not really as good as he could be on money.
Where do you stand on crypto? I know you probably just favor legalizing all currencies and let people choose. But is that something?
Yes, we favor free market money. And the reason we call ourselves Gold Bugs is because whenever people are free to choose, they chose gold. So we sort of use gold as a shorthand. But if platinum won and there was a fair debate between platinum and silver and tungsten or whatever, and platinum won, we'd be platinumists. You know, so we're not like Scrooge McDuck, where, you know, we love to have gold, you know, go through our fingers or something like that. We favor freedom. We favor economic freedom. And gold is the emblem, the symbol of economic freedom and money. And look at the 100 years before and after the Fed. The Fed was started in 1913, and it's roughly 100 years after that. And look at the oscillations of the business cycle before and after. Before, there were little blips here and there. And after, you know, we had the Great Depression, the Great Recession. The Fed was charged with, what is it, keeping the value of the dollar. You know how much the value of the dollar is now? It's roughly 3 or 4 cents. I've lost the track of the latest statistic. But they dissipated 96 to 97% of the value of the dollar. And we've had business cycles here and there. And, you know, yes, end the Fed, and not just monitor the Fed, although monitor the Fed is maybe a step in the right direction. But end the Fed. And, I mean, the Fed is the Sovietization of the money supply. And the money supply is very important. It's much more important than oil or steel or universities or any other one industry or computers, because money pervades every industry. Every time you do anything, you do it with money, unless you're doing barter, and there's very little barter nowadays. So money is crucial, crucially important to the economy, and we've got a bunch of Soviet money people 12 different committees of Soviet planners. What the hell do they know what the interest rate should be? The interest rate should be based on supply and demand of loanable funds.
And if you go back to their dot plots, I mean, they've been wrong the entire time. I mean, after the crisis that they caused to begin with, they've been wrong the entire time. So maybe now, I know you did bring up Scrooge McDuck, and I think that was one of your examples in the book, Defending the Undefendable. So maybe now, if you want to maybe kind of transition into why the left should, you know, like the, you know, the misers who are out there, then maybe get into things like maybe like heroin and prostitution and all the, you know, third rails that you shouldn't touch of, and then give people, but maybe not give us everything, because we want people out there to read your book as well. And then obviously read the new one that's coming up. So.
Okay. Well, there are two books. Here's Defending the Undefendable One. And I've got about 30 characters in it. And I sort of modeled it after Henry Hazlitt, Economics in One Lesson, where he had 30 chapters illustrating, you know, that we should look at the short run as well as the long run, and not just for this people, but all people. And so I defend anyone who is either cordially hated or prohibited by law and yet doesn't violate the libertarian non-aggression principle. And I've got people such as, who have I got here? The prostitute, the pimp, the male chauvinist pig, drug pusher, blackmailer, slanderer, libel, denier of academic freedom, advertiser, person who yells fire in a crowded theater, gypsy cab driver, ticket scalper, dishonest cop, the one who lets people go who are committing just victimless crimes, the miser, the inheritor, the moneylender, the non-contributor to charity, the slumlord, ghetto merchant, speculator, importer, middleman, profiteer, a favorite of mine, profiteer, making profits is good, strip miner, litterer, waste maker, fat capitalist pig, employer, scab, rate buster, employer of child labor. And here is Defending the Undefendable Too, sort of a follow-up book with another 30 different chapters. Let me read them very briefly. Multinational enterprise of the smuggler, the guy who violates tariffs, nuclear energy, corporate raider, hatchet man, the one who fires people. Nothing wrong with firing people. You can quit the job. Why shouldn't the employer be able to quit you, namely by firing you? Daycare provider, automator, smoker, human organ merchant. We've got, 80,000 people on dialysis machines? And if we allowed markets and kidneys and stuff, there'd be, I don't say no one on a dialysis machine, but we'd save lives, and yet somehow we can't do that. Breast milk's substitute purveyor. Going topless in public. We shouldn't have any public property, so if you don't want people to go topless, privatize everything. Polygamous marriage. Sexist, peeping Tom. You're allowed to look. You just can't invade. Ageist, homophobe, stereotyper, war toy manufacturer, colorizer, somebody who colorized black and white movies, heritage building destroyer, bad Samaritan, people who duel, executioner, dwarf thrower, intellectual property denier. So those are the people there. I don't have my list on defending three, but I've got a whole new group of characters, and the people there are those who...
Trump voters defending the undefendable.
Yes, Trump voters. We can put them in, and certainly I've got one now. Used car salesman. I didn't think of used car salesman. I'm always looking for places like that. Used car salesman.
DC politicos. So I mean, I don't know. We've all the
right now. I'm not going to be defending thick libertarians, and I'm certainly not going to be defending rapists or murderers or carjackers or kidnappers or anything like that. But I would defend voluntary slavery, for example, and I've written about that. I might stick that in the book. I'm not sure what will go in which book, but
What about something like Monero, which is a cryptocurrency that you can't track or trace, and there's a lot of people like, hey, it's drug dealers and terrorists. I mean, maybe that could be another
Absolutely. And what's his name? The guy who's in jail for double...
That's Ross Ulbricht.
Ross Ulbricht, yes. I wrote an article saying, is Ross Ulbricht the libertarian hero? And I said, yes. Well, Ross Ulbricht should really have a chapter. I don't know if I'll individualize it that way, but certainly this thing with drugs. You know, in Mexico, they just killed a whole bunch of women and children, Mormons in Mexico. Mm-hmm. And everyone is saying, the drug cartels are very powerful there. They fight the Mexican military.
Bringing the military to take care of it instead of just legalizing the drugs. I mean,
well, you know, that's what Donald wants to do. What Donald wants to do is bring the military and try to kick some cartel butt. What the guy, the president of Mexico, wants to do is hug people. Don't ask. The obvious libertarian solution is legalize drugs. And then virtually, I won't say all the power of these people will dissipate, but a lot of the power of these people will dissipate. Will they become choir boys? Will they become nice guys? Will they become carpenters and plumbers? No. They'll probably go to, I don't know what, kidnapping or Murder Incorporated or something else. But we... Austrian economists deduce from the fact that right now they're in drugs, they're not in these other things, that drugs are better for them than Murder Incorporated or whatever else, the carjacking that they would do, kidnapping. Well, if we take away their most powerful tool, we weaken them. Don't we want to weaken them? Of course we want to weaken them. They're not good guys. They're terrorists, if you want to use that term. So legalizing not just marijuana. I mean, everyone favors legalizing marijuana now. Well, not
except for Joe Biden. I just read today that Joe Biden actually just said he doesn't favor it, and Bloomberg. So between Bloomberg and Biden on the left, they don't favor it.
Bloomberg doesn't even favor legalizing 16-ounce orange soda. Can you imagine when he was mayor of New York City, he was trying to pass a law that you can have orange soda or Coca-Cola in an 8-ounce amount, but if you have 16 ounces, you go to jail?
Well, I moved out of New York State during his reign of terror, so that shows what I think of him.
I mean, it's just sort of ludicrous. I'm also from New York, so we have that in common as well. So, yeah.
And actually, I had dinner with Ross Ulbricht's mother 2 weeks ago when I was in Las Vegas.
I've been in touch with her already, and I sent her this article that I wrote about her son, and I'm in touch with him now. I've been writing him letters. He wants to get a PhD, and I'm trying to see if... electronically, and I'm trying to help him get that. So I'm a buddy of his, an acquaintance of his. He's a libertarian hero. He shouldn't be in jail. If a libertarian became president, the first thing he would do would be to pull out all the troops back to the U.S. Maybe put them on the Mexican border. That's another issue, but pull them out. The second thing he would do is give not Ross Ulbricht the pardon, but every person in jail now who is in jail for a victimless crime, not a non-violent crime, because there are real crimes that are non-violent, like fraud or whatever. Pickpocketing is non-violent, very delicate, but they should be in jail. But people who are doing victimless crimes, prostitution, drugs, gambling, whatever, they should all be let out of jail. And, you know, people are saying we've incarcerated too many people. I think we have the highest proportion of people in jail in the world. Well, that's horrendous. This is something that
more than the Soviet Union we have in even at the heyday. I mean, there's more black people in jail today than there were slaves back in the heyday. And I really think that if Donald Trump wants to have a so-called Trump card, I mean, throwing a bone to the libertarians, like pardoning or commuting the sentence of Ross Ulbricht, mixed with legalizing weed, I think that would be the 1-2 punch. That, because I really think I was out front thinking that he was going to win. My grandpa staged an intervention with me in October of 2016, thinking I was so dumb, telling everyone that I thought he had a good chance of winning, and I thought it was going to be stolen from him. But I really think that Donald Trump the Republicans have their work cut out for him. I don't think it's in the bag. Everyone who I talk to around Arizona thinks it's in the bag. He's definitely going to win. I'm actually taking the field against Donald Trump right now, in terms of just prognostications of where I think things are going, not necessarily where, you know, who I want to win. I think he's going to lose, and I think that throwing a bone to, I mean, because this time the Libertarians for Trump movement is going to be a lot tougher, you know, in the midst of, you know, the debt, you know, basically deficit doubling, you know, troops not being taken home. I mean, there's been none, not that I care about the border wall, but I mean, none of that has even happened. And so I think that, you know, if you're some kid who's 18 years old, you know, in your mom's basement, and you think Hillary has a 98% chance of winning, why are you going to go out and vote? And so if you also think that Hillary has a 98% chance of winning, why are you going to try to engage in any election fraud? And so this time, I think they're going to throw everything in the kitchen sink at getting rid of Donald Trump. And really, you just piss off, you know, a few percentage of libertarians in a few counties, in a few states, and that's all it really takes. I mean, he won by, you know, a few votes here, a few votes there. And it's not about general public opinion polls. It's about what happens in these, you know, four or five states in particular, you know, a few counties in those states. Just flip a few few libertarians to stay home who voted for him, and boom, he's done. And so I think that the Republicans are way too cocky on the prospects of Trump being elected again. Now, I mean, I think that's starting to wane the past 3 months. I think that's, you know, people are more scared now than they were before, but pardoning somebody like Ross Ulbricht and Julian Assange and Snowden, any one of those three, I think are the ticket. I mean, I won't put somebody like Roger Stone, because I think that is just a given that he should be pardoned, because I think Roger Stone got railroaded as well. And now it's a big diatribe. But where do you think in terms of Donald Trump's chances of winning? Not necessarily if you want him to win or not. You know, I don't know if you agree with any of my sentiment or if you think he has it in the bag, because I know a lot of people I talk with think I'm crazy thinking that he was going to win. And now those same people think I'm crazy that he's going to lose. And so no matter what, I just, you know, make everyone all around me basically mad at me for, you know, based on every stance I take, which maybe is why you and I will get along. So,
well, economists predict the future to show they have a sense of humor. And in order to demonstrate that I have a sense of humor, I would say Donald Trump has got a 52% chance of winning. Whether I favor him or not is a different issue, but now we're just prognosticating, and I think he's got slightly more than a half chance of winning. Look, he was just in the hospital yesterday. I heard that on the news, and you know, who knows? He could have a heart attack like Bernie had. God forbid. God forbid for Bernie. It might be Mike Pence who's running. I mean, we're a year and a half away, or no.
I give Mike Pence a 0% chance of winning if that is the case.
Oh no, I think Mike Pence has got a much better chance of winning than Donald.
I would have to decide. I think that's one of the big disagreements I'd have. Is I think that, I mean, guys like me, there's no way I would vote for a Mike Pence.
Compared to who? Compared to Pocahontas?
Well, Hornberger. And this, I mean, I would be pushing for either Hornberger or not vote. I would either not vote or Hornberger over Mike Pence. I mean, without even.
Well, but I agree, in a red or a blue state, you vote for Hornberger. But in a purple state? In a purple state, libertarians should vote for Mike Pence vis-a-vis that Marxist Warren, Elizabeth Warren. She's horrible. She, of all the Democratic people, you know, we talked about who we like the most, Tulsi. Who do we like the least? Well, I think I like her the least. If she were running, I would want Mike Pence.
She makes Bernie Sanders look economically conservative compared to. Yeah, I think I saw a meme that said, you know, back in 30 years ago, she pretended to be an Indian Native American in order to get ahead, and now she's pretending to be Bernie Sanders to get ahead.
That's a good one. I promised you an hour. The hour's about up. Let me thank you for having me on the show. It was a pleasure, and I look forward to doing it again sometime.
Hey guys, so before we get back to the program, it's no surprise to anybody that we've been severely shadow banned. I mean, both myself over at my Liberty Advisor page on Facebook. I have less people today than I did 3 years ago. My page only saw growth the first 2.5 months it was around. So I was at 32,000 after 2.5 months. Today I'm at 30,000 views. My views only reach about 0.03% any videos that I pump out there. So believe me, I know all about shadow banning and what I can do. Over here at Wham! Also, a ton of shadow banning that's going on. So what you guys can do right now is, if you're watching this, especially if you're watching this on YouTube, watching this on Wham right now, you can go over to my channel right now. It's the Liberty Advisor page. And then on here, you'll see a link for DLive. You guys can click on that. It goes right to my DLive account, which is a great place where you can find live streaming, blockchain alternative. You can also find BitChute, which is a YouTube alternative. All my content is up there. I know Josh has, I think most of World Alternative Media is up there as well. Float.app. FLOTE.APP. That's our good friends Kingsley Edwards and the soon-to-be Aaron Edwards. And basically, it's sort of like Reddit meets Facebook meets Twitter meets YouTube meets Patreon. It kind of all put together. New and up and coming. Highly recommend that. And then also have my Instagram, which, you know, obviously you're on enemy platform there, so I don't expect that to stay up forever. Now you can also head over to the libertyadvisorshow.com or libertyadvisorshow.com. Not the prettiest website, but you guys can go down here, see all the different podcasts we're on. Actually, not all of them. Some of them. We're on pretty much every place where you can find various podcasts. You get the links for DLive, links for Float. I wouldn't really recommend Twitch, but that's, you know, up there too. BitChute. I got my personal YouTube page is up there. Then also down at the bottom, you'll see, you know, mine's not really on that as much. LinkedIn, for those of you who are more professional, can find me there. You'll see also links for Brave Browser, which is a, you know, a great kind of Chrome alternative, Presearch, which is a great Google alternative. Then also you can, another way you guys can get my free ebook, How It's Rigged the Economy. But probably the best way you can keep in touch is actually by texting Liberty Advisor, one word, no spaces. That's Liberty Advisor with an O. And then the number is 71441. So the number again is 71441, Liberty Advisor, one word, no spaces. You'll then be sent basically a link to download this ebook. And then also we'll get you on our text list, which I've only sent out a few texts over the past 2 years. It actually does cost quite a bit of money when you get, you know, enough people signed up in aggregate. But, you know, this is emergency communications, let you guys know that, you know, we might not be commercially viable, you know, after December 10th. So right now is the time to act. And then if you guys, you know, get on that text email list, I also have, you know, raffles every now and then, and the previous people who were signed up for that are also eligible to win future prizes in most cases. So you know, highly recommend you guys check us out on alternative platforms. We don't know how much longer we're going to be here, so again, please head over to libertyadvisorshow.com or thelibertyadvisor.com. You guys can also support myself. You know, if you don't know who your financial advisor is, or you don't like your advisor, or you don't think your advisor knows as much as I do, you know, I'd really appreciate the business as well. You guys can go to thelibertyadvisor.com, find out ways that you can schedule with me. Also should be in the link below, bit.ly/booktimp will also bring you directly to my scheduling link. And so unless you directly talk with me, none of this information is, everything here is for educational and informational purposes only. Past performance is no indication for future turns. You guys have an ability to talk to me down below. And so unless we've talked, unless I've personally recommended and advised you to do something, then this is not an advisement. So you guys have no excuses. Now on with the show. Thank you.
Boss Ulbricht is serving a double life sentence without parole for all nonviolent charges for creating a website. Please help free this peaceful man. Go to freeross.org and sign and share the petition.